Blog Talk Radio.
From the north is sweeping past my state. Yeah, you can have some of my snow.
No. I refuse. So, Chris, you just had a great thing happen with your film, the WBGO story. But before we talk about that, I want to know about your business as a New Jersey filmmaker.
Okay.
So you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. First, I'd just like to, thank you for showing interest and having me on your show just to talk a little bit. But I've been in this business for about 30 years. You know, I got my degree in visual communications from Keene University in New Jersey, and I'm a lifelong New Jersey resident. But I kind of knew what I wanted to do when I got to college, and that was my major. A lot of people ask me how I got, why I wanted to do film, and I kind of went back way early in my life. And my father was sort of the documentarian of the family. He had the Super 8 movies, and if you're a little bit older, you'll remember the big strips of bright light that people used to use back in the day. So he had all of those things going on. So I guess just seeing people shooting home movies and film was kind of stuck back there until I had time to let it out as I got older. So, I worked a few years after college in a couple of companies, doing promotional videos, marketing videos, training videos. I did all that stuff. And, I left the corporate world and started my own business. And that's a whole nother story. Why I ended up being an entrepreneur is, I was at the last job I had, last regular 9-to-5 that I had it was just a terrible environment. And I mean that to talk about racism. I was doing my thing there. I ran a communications department. We had a writer. We had a couple of artists. And we had me doing the video portion. And, we did marketing for the company. They were a computer company. And they it was kind of a decent position. I reported directly to the director of the that division. And then a couple of years in, they promoted somebody from the warehouse factory who was a friend of the director. And then I started reporting to him, and I didn't like that. It was sort of a demotion, I would write my paperwork and progress reports and everything, and he basically would take them and change them, put his name on them. And the guy was kind of, uneducated, racist. Not that it makes any difference, educated or uneducated, racist is racist. But he was pretty bad. So I got to the point where, I kind of hated being there. So at the time, me and my wife, we had a 1-year-old daughter. So I just called her one day and said, this is driving me nuts. Stomach's hurting. I'm pissed off, ready to hurt somebody. And I'm a second-degree black belt, so I know how to control myself. And I didn't hurt anybody. And I don't advocate violence, just so who's ever listening out there. But anyway, I called her up and said, look, I got to get out of here. And, I'll do something. So basically, I quit that job. I'm glad she supported me. I quit that job. We took my 1-year-old daughter out of daycare to save money. So I stayed home, and I was missed for about a year. And I called my previous two jobs, and I started doing, freelance work for them and, just helping them out because I knew knew what they were about. So that's kind of how I got started. And then I just started growing and growing. And by growing, I mean just getting more jobs, better jobs. And I did a lot of government work, which is kind of a surprise. I even worked with Walter Cronkite doing a documentary for West Point. But, I've been keeping it small. At most, I had two employees. I had a writer and an editor for a couple of contracts we had. But, I deliberately kept things small because my philosophy was I wanted to be like an accordion where I could stretch and go small if I had to, because things get hard, they get busy, then they get slow. And a lot of people go out of business. They just get too much overhead. And also, I'm very creative, and I like to be hands-on. I like to keep projects, you know, in control of what, you know, what I want them to be, rather than just let everybody do anything. So, you know, I kind of did that for 30 years. And
okay, and so go back to when you said your father had this equipment. Did you
mm-hmm.
see him use it, or did he allow you to use it?
Oh, no, I couldn't really use it. Those lights were too hot to let little kids get around. But he was always documenting everything. When the family came over, it was no vacations back in those days. You know, we grew up, we had like three families in one little house, you know, so we weren't going on vacations or anything. But the camera was always running all the holidays, and it was just always running. As a matter of fact, when he died, you know, what I did kind of as a therapy for myself, I went back and took all the home movies he ever made and digitized them and made DVDs and gave those out to the family. It took me about 3 days to do that. I kind of went into hibernation, and that, you know, was kind of a, you know, that's what I did. But yep, I just saw home movies all over the place, and I kind of inherited.
And so did that interest you in documentation? You know,
I think it
there's a difference between making a film and making a documentary.
Oh, definitely. A lot of people don't realize that. I'm glad you said it. Like, there's different things. Like, you know, people will say, you know, say, "Hey, Chris, you're a videographer." I'll say, no, I'm not a videographer. I'm a producer, director, and editor, which means, you know, the programs I do are scripted programs. You know, it requires, you know, where an event person may just cover a football game or cover a wedding, and you don't really work from a script. And what I do is, you know, we have concept development, and we, you know, we think of what we want, we write it down, and it's pretty it's a well-organized thing. Shot list, scripts, editing, you know, there's, because time is money. You can't go on a shoot with a crew and not be organized. So anyway, like you said, it's a real formal process. I mean, it's creative, but it's a process.
And so tell us how you came to do the WBGO story.
Okay. The WBGO story came about because the New Jersey Historical Commission had a solicitation out. And what they wanted, the theme was something from New Jersey that grew larger than New Jersey. And the examples they gave, they said the Count Basie Theater. And that started in Red Bank, New Jersey. And now everyone around the country, probably a lot of people around the world, know about Count Basie. So that was one example. And then they said the Sopranos. That's another example of something that's culturally fictional based on some fact, but it started in New Jersey and now it's around the world. So I wanted to do something. So I said WBGO kind of fits that bill. So, you know, put in a proposal, took me a while to write it. And actually, I didn't get it the first time around because it was a couple of things that I left out. But anyway, once I got a team together, you know, I found my historians in Newark. And, you know, I got cooperation from the Newark Jazz Institute, and we kind of worked together, and that's how we got started. And once I had the idea to do it, I had a friend from WBGO, a host, and I told her about the project I wanted to do. And she introduced me to Dorothon Kirk. And Dorothon Kirk is the widow of Rahsaan Roland Kirk, and everybody knows who he is, a great saxophonist, multi-instrumentalist. Well, anyway, once I got connected with Miss Kirk also, just to give you a little background for people who don't know her, you know, addition to her, you know, career with managing Rahsaan after his death, she was one of the first people who worked at WBGO, and she knew everyone in the jazz industry. So she was a big asset and key in WBGO, you know, getting off the ground and becoming what they are today. So she worked with me, and she was I just couldn't have did it without her. But she hooked me up with everyone I needed to interview, and we just went over it. We interviewed almost all the key people who started WBGO. And that's sort of what the story is about, and I'll kind of segue into that a little bit. The story is a diverse group of people got together in Newark, you know, maybe 10 years after the riots, and they wanted to do something positive. So a commission got together of Newark politicians and city leaders, and they said, you know, WBGO is a station that's run by the school, and it's underutilized. We need to do something with it. So they hired Bob Ottenhoff to go up. Richard Roper was the head of the division in Newark, and he hired Bob Ottenhoff, who was the founder of WBGO, to go out and find a better way to use, you know, assets. And that's what they did. And it just grew. The documentary will kind of just, it takes you from the early days to when it really took off.
Okay, and so it already viewed at the New Jersey Historical Commission on Saturday. Is that correct?
Yeah. The New Jersey.
And it's going to
the
view
Jersey
again. New Jersey Historical. New Jersey Film Festival.
Film Festival.
Right.
Yeah. It just finished there.
And it's going to show there again. Do you know the date?
Nope. It actually got selected for three festivals: the New Jersey Film Festival, the New Jersey Film Festival is over now, or it ends this week. But you can't see my film anymore because it's days come and gone. But the Thomas Edison Black Mariah Film Festival starts February 5th, and if anybody wants to look at that, just go to www.blackmariah. That's BLACKMARIA.org, the Thomas Edison Black Mariah Film Festival. And that starts February 5th. And if you miss that one, you can catch the Garden State Film Festival. That starts in March 24th. And that's www.gsff.org. So you got a couple of chances to see it if you don't catch it at the next festival.
GSFF.org,
GardenStateFilmFestival.org. So GSFF.org.
And it's BlackMariah.org.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right,
Black
and I'll
Mariah.
Post that on Facebook so that people
Great.
Can
Thanks.
See it.
Okay,
so now are these the first film festivals that you have submitted to?
Yeah, it is actually. You know, we started the film in 2018. We finished late 2019, and you know, did some polish ups. So we just hit the first festival. These are the first three that I actually entered four, and I heard from these three so far. But these are the first ones that I entered the film in. You know, so it's actually the first time anyone's seen the film. You know, we finished it. Put them right to the festival, so it's not even released to the public yet.
Mm.
So I was really happy that, you know, we got selected, and even more happy we were the show opener, which is kind of a prestigious spot to get at a festival. So we show opened the New Jersey Film Festival.
That's great.
Yeah.
So what other projects do you have that you're working on?
One thing that I started 2 years ago, I joined the African American Chamber of Commerce. About 3 years ago, I joined the African American Chamber of Commerce. And the reason I did that is because, you know, so, and I'm going to go back to the racism thing again. A lot of racism out here. It's hard to get gigs. So I said, I'm going to go back and try to, you know, work with my people. So I worked with them for about 2 years and pitched an idea, and it finally came to fruition. So we're about 1 year in. I've been doing a monthly television show called Pathway to Success. And what we do is each month we highlight African-American businesses, political leaders, and we just show that, you know, we got it going on. black folks. We in businesses, we show leaders in the field. We show politicians. We interviewed the lieutenant governor of New Jersey, black woman. We interviewed stock, executive who owns his own company in Chicago. So we show people doing things that everyone needs to know that we can do. And we do that every month. And if you want to see that show, it airs in New Jersey, but you can see it anywhere. It's on NJTV. Go to NJTV online. You can see it. And you can also see it on PBS.org online. So we're real proud of that. So it's Pathways to Success. That's a project I'm always working on. I had another gig that COVID killed it. I used to teach entrepreneurial classes for the New Jersey Juvenile Justice Commission. We used to go inside and teach young men aged 16 to 20 how to make money using video. Because once these young men are incarcerated, it's even harder for them to find a job. So I pretty much told them, if I could do it, you could do it. So I would teach them how to make short little PSAs, commercials, and things, and how to shoot music videos, ways they can just get a camera and edit and make their own money. But like I said, the jails have closed down since COVID, so I'm not doing that. But the TV show keeps me busy. The documentary has been keeping me busy. And I got, other projects. Hey, that's the life of an entrepreneur. You got to have your whiteboard full of ideas. As soon as you get a break, you try to do the next one and keep stuff going. You got to make your own, way, which is good.
Absolutely.
I work on crazy hours, but at least I'm doing it for myself and I don't feel like a sucker, if I'm in business, I know it. If I'm out of business, I'll know it, but at least someone won't tap me on the shoulder and say, hey, here's your pink slip. You're gone. So, I'm happy about that, so.
Okay. And, I got two more questions for you. First
okay.
of all, and make this one short.
Okay.
Do you feel that the awards that you have won have motivated you more or catapulted you into a higher realm?
I think this film festival might put me at a different realm because it's getting to where I want it. It's a realm where I really want to be. Doing more documentaries. That's how I want. I'm later in my career and I want to do more of these, but I've won a lot of awards for my other videos. And basically they're just good marketing tools. It's good to say you won awards. It's a validation, but I don't think they really help your career that much. They're just validations and you can just use them for marketing. The documentary, I'm hoping I can get some exposure and people say, okay, you work on this with me or you work on this for me. So I think this is going to help me more with my goals and some of my other past awards.
And do you have
forget,
any plans?
Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
No, I just wanted to compliment
you
on your opening song.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to talk about that. But do you have any plans to do a feature film?
A couple of my friends been wanting to get together to do feature films. And, I may one day. I sort of like documentaries, but I'm open to doing something that's positive and creative. That's what I want to do. If it's positive and creative, I'm interested. I just like documentaries. I know it's not a lot of money in them, but my goal is just kind of get paid, do what I like, and then I'm happy.
Okay, we're at the end of this show. We'll have to have you back. I'm going to bring you on Music Woman Radio because I want to talk about how you get the music for your documentary. But I don't want to talk about it now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to schedule a longer show. And hopefully it'll be after, maybe in March for your next showing before. And I really am happy that I met you, Chris, and we'll continue to talk.
good meeting you also, and I appreciate you, taking the time to talk with me.
Okay, and this will be archived and playable in about 10-15 minutes.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right, you
All
take
right.
care.
So thank you, Chris Daniel. And this last song is one that I wrote when I was presenting to children in school, and I had to calm them down. So this is Love Translation.
All right.
Thanks, Chris.
Yes.
Translated as a child. Translated.